Good afternoon, Muskegon. How are you doing? It's time for the show, Torn in Two. I am your host, Gregory Roberts. And listen, if there was ever a show that was very important, I need you to do me a favor. It's May 24th. I need you to share this show on your Facebook pages. This one's dear to me. Let me welcome you for this holiday weekend. Don't forget to embrace and celebrate Memorial Day weekend. If you are driving and you need to see this show, go back to our social. You can go to WVS 103.7 The Beat or M106 to review this. And I beg of thee for you guys to share this message, because you'll see why. Today's weather high of 80, low of 54, 50% chance of rain. I want to take you back to 1991, 33 years ago in June. A woman found dead, a pregnant mom that had no gang affiliations. The only thing people could describe this woman is being nice and genuine. Pregnant, found dead at the doorstep of her house. 1991, taking you back. Imagine if that was your sister, your child, your aunt, and no justice has been served. That's going to be the first part of the show. And then the second part of the show, we're going to have a very bright brother that's doing amazing things in Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Travis Townsend Jr. But let's get to the show. I have to introduce some very special people. Miss Anna Crockett is here, who is going to speak and give us information. And we have to be careful because there's some information that they are not able to give out. But also, criminologist Clark Williams from California is here as well. So let's bring them out. Miss Anna Crockett.
Hello.
Mother Crockett, I'm going to call you, okay. If that's okay.
That's fine.
Attorney Clark Williams, good afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon, Greg. Thanks.
Welcome
for having
to the show. 1991, 33 years as in June, correct?
Yes.
And no justice served. Take us back to that moment when this happened.
It was about 5:30 a.m. on June 30th. I received a phone call that my daughter was laying in her front yard. And when we got there, the police had arrived already, fire departments, and she had been murdered. As of this day, there's no justice has been done. And I'm just appealing to the community to please come forward. If they know anything, please come forward. The least little thing could be a help to her case. We have always, every year, received phone calls, received texts. We've gone to the police department. They want to bring us in to find out new evidence, if we've heard anything. We share with them what we've heard, but still to no avail have we received any justice for my daughter. Frida was not a person that was in the street. She was not on drugs. She had faults like we all do, but mm-hmm. It was nothing that would cause her to be murdered like she was. I'm just appealing to the community to come forth with any information. It could be your child. It could be your daughter, your sister. She had two children already. They have missed all of their lives of the things that they wanted to share with their mom. Because she's gone, someone took her life innocently, prematurely. And I just think that people that know things, they do know something, they won't come forward, or when they do come forward, they tell part truths. So we're just asking you all to please come forward. And if you know anything, contact the authorities. Don't inbox me or my family with false information. If you can't come forward with to the police and tell them, then please do not contact us. We have so much information that has been shared, but it has come to no fruition. So we're just appealing to you all to please come forward with whatever you know. The Muskegon Police Department has not done justice as far as I'm concerned with this case. I don't know the reason, but every year that, like I said before, they call us in, we share our information. They promised me they're going to contact me regularly to find out, to let me know what they found out. I was there last year about this time, talked to two detectives. They told me that they had found some DNA on her fingernails and they were going to do a DNA testing. To this day, I have not heard from them.
You have not heard from them at all?
No, I've called, my family members have called. They will not even return our phone calls. So we don't know what's going on. I've had an audience, thankful to Paul with the prosecutor, and they are, they're open to some of the things that we shared when we went to see them. I just want to say this too, that I happened to be watching a segment on WZZM TV, and I saw Dr. Karen Holt, who is over the Criminal Justice Department at Western Michigan University. And they had just got funding for additional six students to be a part of their cold case unit. Mm-hmm. I contacted her and I told her about Frida's case and she looked into it. She did contact me back. She said that she would want it so badly to help me, but because it was not a part of her district, she could not help. But what she did do, she contacted a person in California, Clark Williams, who was so willingly to help us. And I just want to say that in 7 months, Clark has found out more information about Frida's case than the police department has done in 33 years. And that is a fact. Things, wow, I never knew about, things that the police department never even investigated. So I have a great concern about the Muskegon Police Department. I want to say that it has to do with color. I want to say that it has to do with the time frame. I have to say it has to do with the last name. Also, I was informed when I went last year to talk to the detective that because there's been so many different detectives on her case, her file is everywhere. A part here, part there. They haven't even put her file totally together, which I thought was just so just injustice to even tell me that. But that's where we're standing now, as trying to get the community out, trying to even to get the police department to do more than what they're doing. I've contacted the commissioner and she's going to try to get me an audience with the chief of police, because I'm not sure what he's doing or what his department is doing. I just need some answers.
Attorney Williams, I mean, she said so much. How do we break this down and how can we help to solve this case?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for having me. And Anna is correct. I am on this case largely because of Anna Crockett. I think anyone who has met Anna know that no one has been a more vigorous voice for Frida than her mother. She has kept this case alive for 33 plus years. And that's why I think I certainly am volunteering my services. I don't get paid anything. I am here simply at the pleasure of Anna Crockett and for all of Frida's surviving family and friends, her children, her siblings. So many friends left behind who lost Frida. You know, Frida was only 28 years old when she was killed. She had her entire life ahead of her. Mm-hmm. So I was contacted by Dr. Karen Holt from the Michigan State Cold Case Unit. She's familiar with my work. I'm working actually with her on another cold case in Michigan. And when she heard from Anna Crockett, she said, you know, there's somebody who I think could be helpful, and that's me. And that's largely because of the type of investigatory work I do. It's a little different from the police. Ultimately, law enforcement is going to need to solve this case. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do is work with law enforcement to develop new leads in the investigation. Mm-hmm. And with cold cases, they get cold for a reason. And it's oftentimes, as Anna has articulated so well, that you get numerous detectives, different police officers, different prosecutors over the course of decades. The file gets lost. No one is sort of directing the cold case investigation. And also the other problem is a number of the witnesses actually also pass away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been 33 years. And so that's always a challenge with a cold case. What I try to do is take the passage of time and turn it on its head, because at the same time, while there's a lot that's lost, there's also a lot to be gained, because all of those potential persons of interest in this case, you can begin to track what they've done with their lives for the last 33 years. Mm-hmm. And out of that sort of evaluation, you can try to identify people that maybe went on and committed similar crimes then 15, 20 years later, or were engaged in other kind of behaviors that were violent offenses that could have, could be an indicator that they could have been involved in this case. What I do is I always start with understanding the life of the victim. I think what's so sad about Frida's case is that Frida is known for the day she died, June 30th, the brutal way that her life was stolen from her. What I try to do is uncover everything about who Frida actually was, beginning from her birth to her grandparents and her parents and how she came into this world, who her parents were, her mother, Anna, her father, George, the siblings who loved her, the schools she went to, the health conditions that she faced, mm-hmm. the relationships that she had, the friendships that she had, the people she trusted. Her faith is such an important part of Frida's life. So it takes months for me to do this work. And I almost pretend as if I sort of time travel. I go back to 1991 and learn everything that's happening in the community. And I learn everything about what was going on with Frida at that time. What was she sharing with her friends? What was she sharing with her mother? Oftentimes it's different information. All of us do that, right? We all present different parts of ourselves to different people. And out of that massive assessment, and I must have 10,000 tiny pieces of information, I start to make connections. And I start to sort of put together a 360-degree view of Anna Covington, or of Frida Covington. And from that, hopefully, can identify new leads. And Anna is correct. We have identified some new leads. That information has been shared with law enforcement. And I've been in contact with the lead law enforcement agency as well, and continue to be, and to be of service to them. But what we really need for this case is for anyone who knew Frida, may have heard something about the case, something on the street that they may have heard, to come forward and share what they know, so that we can close this case and we can help Anna find peace. You know, Anna is now in her 70s. She's closer to the end of her life than the beginning of her life. And I know that what is inspiring me is to help Anna find some peace as she nears the end of her life. She wants to know what happened to her beloved Frida. And I think we all do. But what that's going to take for the public is to be of support to Anna by coming forward and sharing what they know. It's so important. Sometimes Anna was right. Sometimes it's the smallest piece of information where you think that's not even important, or perhaps the police already know about it. As Anna has indicated, in this case, there was a lot the police didn't know that we were able to uncover. And so now is the time. And I really feel strongly about this. I really feel that now is the time for us to put this case to an end, to bring it to a close, and to deliver justice for Frida and her family.
Let me ask you a question, Attorney Williams. The statute of limitations right now, if somebody knows something, if I can come out and speak right now, I could speak without penalty, correct?
That's correct. The statute of limitations has run out in almost all the other features of this crime. The only thing that it's not is homicide. There is no statute of limitations for homicide. But so, and I know one of the concerns, and I've talked to so many people in Muskegon over the last few months, and frankly, I've loved it. I've gotten to know Muskegon very well and Muskegon Heights. I've visited, as Anna knows, I've spent time in Muskegon and Muskegon Heights to really understand the community. And obviously what I hear from almost every person I talk to is there's a distrust between the public and law enforcement for lots of reasons. And, you know, I don't want to get into that in this interview, but that oftentimes can be an obstacle to coming forward because of concern that perhaps the police will take advantage of that and start investigating the person who comes forward with new evidence. So there are other ways. If you don't feel comfortable sharing this information directly with law enforcement, reach out to me. I'm happy to take it. You can speak to me in confidence as well. And I do that a lot in my work. And then I present the lead to law enforcement. So there's a lot of ways to bring this information forward. But I think as Anna already articulated, it's important to bring real legitimate information, not just innuendo, not just some wild rumor. There's a lot of rumors that have occurred over the last 33 years in this case. But what we need are people who know what happened or were eyewitnesses or have a direct relationship with Frida or with any of the people that were involved in Frida's life to come forward. You know, in 1991, I've gone back and looked, as I said, I sort of take a trip back to 1991. I've spent the last few months just in 1991 in my head. There were only three murders in Muskegon that year. The only one that was unsolved is Frida Covington's. The other two cases were solved. So there were not a significant number of homicides in Muskegon back in 1991. There were a lot of other crimes, largely fueled by the crack cocaine epidemic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that could very well have played a role in this case. We know Frida did not use drugs herself. But as many of your listeners know, the impact of the crack cocaine epidemic in Muskegon was tremendous. It affected a lot of people's lives at that time. And so that I've looked at that to see how that could have played a role. Again, not because Frida was using crack cocaine, but perhaps some of the people around her may have, and that could have influenced their behavior in the crime. So there was a lot that was happening. And sadly, unfortunately, so many of the people in Muskegon in the 1980s and early 1990s have passed on. And that's it's a real obstacle in this case. And every year that goes by, we run the risk of someone with information passing on. So if one of your listeners does know something, we implore them to please come forward. Please come forward and share what you know so that we can get these leads to the appropriate investigating authority in Muskegon and hopefully get this case solved.
Okay, I have one more question. Then I'm going to go over to Mother Crockett. It's been 33 years and we've lost a lot of time, but we've gained some things with technology, especially in DNA. And now DNA can be looked at with such things as people looking to go back to see where they were born and stuff like that. There's so many ways that we can match DNA. Talk a little bit about that and how this could affect the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, Greg. I mean, the investigative tools we have today as a result, because of forensic evidence and improvements in technology, most cold cases today get solved because of new investigative tools like DNA collection. When you go back to 1991, they weren't really collecting DNA back then. They were collecting fingerprints. They may have been collecting items that might have DNA on it. And so we can go back and test that information. Test whatever may have been collected from the crime scene. But we didn't even have a database with everyone's DNA like we do today. You have to be able to test DNA against other people's DNA. So we have tremendous new tools for forensic collection. And so that's something I know that law enforcement has been looking into. I know that they've discussed that with Anna. I think one of the challenges with that, of course, is cost. And Anna and I have spoken. We're not going to let money get in the way of solving this case. Mm-hmm. Whatever it costs, I will pay it out of my own pocket. It doesn't matter. I don't want to let money get in the way of any piece of this investigation because we're trying to find justice for Freda. But I do know that the cold case unit that is working on Freda's case are going back. They're looking for what DNA can possibly be retested. They're looking to see are there items that they may have in their presence that may have DNA on it that was never tested. So I know that those are conversations that I'm having with them. I know Anna's having conversations with them. You know, there's one thing about DNA, which is different than eyewitness testimony, is DNA doesn't lie. If you can get a DNA match, that is the truth. And as Anna knows, once I started working on this case almost 6 months ago, I am a truth seeker. I am always trying to find the truth of what happened, and DNA can be a helpful tool in doing so. But that's only one part of the piece. I think the challenge why this case went cold is because we don't really have that kind of forensic information, forensic evidence. It's why most cases actually go cold. Most of the cold cases in this country are from 3, 4, 5 decades ago, where there was not the kind of forensic evidence that we have today. So that's why we need people that have information, that know something. That doesn't make it true. We have to vet it, right? Just because someone comes forward with information, it doesn't make it true information. We're looking for evidence that can be corroborated and can be in support of other evidence that we have in this case.
Okay. Mother Crockett, I'm going to go to you because we talked briefly about your daughter. Tell people, talk to people about your daughter, who she was, how she lived. From what I've read, you know, she was a spiritual person, 2 kids, pregnant. I remember in 1991 waking up and hearing that case, but I didn't know your daughter. Introduce your daughter to the people that are listening and watching.
My daughter was a fun-loving person. She took friends to heart. She loved her family. She loved her children. And she was a home person. She did not really hang out, but she did allow people to come in. She was very friendly, which I think at times maybe she was a little too friendly. But she loved the Lord. We were planning to go to church that next morning. I had just talked to her a few hours before. I received the phone call. We were going to meet up at church that day, but she was a hardworking person. She did have epilepsy, which prevented her from really working a full-time job. So what she did was she took care of other people's children, and she enjoyed doing that. Like I said, she was really homegoing, friendly people, outgoing, loved her family, loved her children, would do anything that she could to help anyone at any time, any place. That's just who she was.
I want you to speak to that person that maybe knows something right now, but too afraid to speak. What would you say to that individual?
I'm just asking that individual or individuals to just go into their heart and think if that was their daughter, if that was their sister, if that was their mother, to go into their heart and just do what is right and come forth and tell any information that they would know about this murder that killed my daughter. I just plead for that to that person to just please come forward. It's my daughter now, but it could be your child, your loved one later. And holding information is not helping anyone. And I'm sure you have a conscience that's bothering you. So that if you that is the case, please come forward and tell anything that you know.
What would you say to the person? Maybe if the person that did it is listening and watching, what would you say to that person?
I'm asking that person to please come forward. I'm just looking for justice. I'm looking for justice. I just want to know what happened to my daughter. If they have a heart of hearts, to come forward and just tell what they know that they did and why they did it. I just want answers and I want justice. And I'm just asking you, please, to come forward and give us the reason why you killed my daughter.
Attorney Williams, I'm going to pose the same questions to you. What would you say to people out there that have information, but maybe feel reluctant to come and give that information.
Well, I want to say, first of all, that anyone that does have information, I can appreciate why they may be reluctant to come forward. You know, that oftentimes people have had their own experiences with law enforcement. They're concerned about stepping forward. They're concerned that it might bring attention to them and other cases that may be pending with the criminal justice system. They've had negative experiences with the criminal justice system. They don't trust it. They're concerned, you know, Muskegon's a small community. They're concerned that this information may get tracked back to them because we don't know who the perpetrator is. Those are all legitimate reasons why someone may not come forward today or may not have come forward 33 years ago. I do have to say that, you know, with the passage of time, my hope is that those people that knew and had information directly, that knew information back in 1991, that with the passage of time, they've matured, they've grown, they've become parents themselves, they have sisters, they have grandchildren, that they can put themselves in the shoes of Anna Crockett. And they can appreciate and understand what Anna has faced for the last 33 years of her life, not knowing what happened to her beloved Frida. And if they can do that, if they can put themselves in Anna Crockett's shoes, I think they will do the right thing. And there are ways that we can ensure that the information they bring forward does not get traced back to them. There's information that's been shared with me and with Anna and with other members of Anna's family, where that information can be passed on to law enforcement without anyone's name being associated with it. We need new leads so that law enforcement can do what they do best, which is investigate, but they need new leads to do it. And that's what we're trying to do, is encourage anyone to come forward, share this information, and to know that the information will be taken on its own and will not be used in any other investigatory purpose.
Will you explain to people how Silent Observer works?
So I'm not personally familiar with Silent Observer, other than knowing that Silent Observer was established for this very purpose, to allow people to come forward in an anonymous capacity and provide leads to local law enforcement in cases. So using Silent Observer is a wonderful tool that can be used to do exactly what we're talking about, which is to provide information that they may have. Again, to Anna's point, we want to make certain that Silent Observer is not overwhelmed with new leads, with new information. So if you've already shared the information before, there's no need to call back again, but also information that is not hearsay. We want information that is someone that actually knows something specific about this incident. You know, there are people who have information who have not come forward to tell us what they know. And so, as Anna has done, not just today, but Anna has done this for 33 years, has implored those people to please come forward and allow us to move this case forward to find justice for Frida.
Let's go back to that Silent Observer number. It is 722-CRIME or 722-27463. If you know anything, please call. Now, what if somebody wants to get in touch with you, Attorney Williams? How could they get in touch with you if they want to talk to you directly?
Yeah, they can just send an email to me. My email is very easy. It's clarkwilliams@hotmail.com. Just fire off an email. Let me know if they'd like to have a conversation with me. As Anna knows, I talk to everybody. Anybody who's got something to say, I'm willing to and eager to hear it. You know, I'm trying to, like I said, I'm trying to vet as much of this information as possible. You know, sometimes information gets presented that's pretty easily kind of discarded because it's not relevant information. And so that's something that, you know, I try to do as much as possible. But also I do work with law enforcement. So if there's information that comes forward that presents new information in this case that can be passed on to the investigatory team working this case. At the end of the day, as much as I would like to say that I can solve this case, I can't. At the end of the day, we need the police and we need the local law enforcement community to solve this case. And I think with the efforts of Anna, the efforts of you, Greg, and Paul, by giving us a chance to talk about Frieda's case, that's assisting and aiding them in these efforts to keep the case a high-profile case in Muskegon. It's really what happens in most cold cases. They go cold and they go quiet, oftentimes because they may not have family members like Anna to keep beating the drumbeat to keep the case a high-profile case. And so the more that we can do that we can get the word out in the community that this case is not yet solved. A lot of your listeners may think the case has already been solved, and it hasn't been. It has been 33 years, and we still have no justice for Frieda. And so that's why it's so important, even to second what you were saying, Greg, of encouraging everyone to listen, to post this to their Facebook profiles and pass the word to everyone in Muskegon and Muskegon Heights. For anyone who may have information, now is the time to share what they know.
Thank you, Mother Crockett. I want to go back to you.
Yes.
What if somebody, they don't want to talk to police, they are reluctant to call Silent Observer, but they may talk to you? How are they able to contact you?
They can contact me through Facebook Messenger or through email. My email is pretty simple too. It's CrockettAnna3@gmail.com. I'm willing to take information if it's legitimate information.
I'm going to give you the last word. I know this is hard. 33 years of waiting for justice.
Yes.
I can't imagine being in your shoes. I want you to take the last couple minutes to just talk to Muskegon from the heart about this case.
Muskegon, I'm just pleading to you to come forward with anything that you may know regarding my daughter. This has been 33 years that I have been trying to work with law enforcement, with the community, trying to get information. I have received so much that was not prevalent to the case. But if you have concrete evidence, information, please, please, please contact me. I will make sure that the proper authorities get the information. Just think about her children. She has grandchildren now. And just think about yourself. Put yourself in my place. How would you feel if it was your daughter? How would you feel if it was your mother or your sister? Just put yourself in my place and find it in your heart to come and just tell us what you know. No matter how much it is, how little it is, please come forward. And I would appreciate it so very much.
Mother Anna, yes. I want you to know that we're all in. If you ever need anything from us, we're all in 100% on this. Attorney Clark Williams, we're all in on this. Please keep us informed and let us know what we can do to get justice for Frieda.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you, Clark. Thank you. And I appreciate Paul so much for this opportunity. And this will not be our last time. We will be coming back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you.
God bless and have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Mother Clark and Attorney Williams. This Muskegon, look, 33 years. I want you to imagine if that was your mother. I want you to imagine if that was your daughter, your child, and you holding on some information. You know, people say, you know, snitches get stitches and all that kind of stuff. No. We want justice. If that was my child, I would want to be just want that justice. Don't you want justice for her? Isn't it about time? 33 years of no answers. And let me say this to the police. Police, I know that you guys have a huge crime load, but nothing should just go away and just die. We want justice for Frieda. We're going to take a break and come back with Attorney Travis. I'm touched. I'm moved. You're listening and watching Torn in Two on 103.7 The Beat. We'll see you in a second. And welcome back to Torn in Two. You know, I'm speechless over here. I remember in 1991, I just got laid off. And I remember waking up and hearing about this case. So please, let's get justice for Freedom. But now we got to go, and I got to change my hat and put the Go Blue hat on and introduce a young man that is doing some exciting things in Georgia. Put your hands together for Mr. Travis Townsend. How you doing, sir?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. And you were too kind with the explanation, the descriptor, young. I wish.
Hey, go blue, by the way.
Go blue every day.
Listen, I was reading your resume, and it's quite extensive. Would you introduce people and tell people a little bit about yourself?
Sure. First of all, I'm a Muskegon Heights native graduate, raised, almost virtually born. I was born in Mississippi, but I grew up K through 12 in Muskegon Heights, and a proud Tiger. Went on to the University of Michigan to study psychology. I'm a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Michigan. Ran track in high school. Loved staying physical and being physical, but always had a dream of sort of leveraging my analytical skills and sort of my desire to support and protect and fight for people through the legal field. And so I attended the University of Michigan, applied and accepted and attended the University of Michigan Law School, and came out of there in 2003 and decided to kind of spread my wings and focus on being a business lawyer, a corporate lawyer, specializing in mergers and acquisitions. And I took my talents to Georgia. So started out practicing here in Georgia at one of the top law firms in the region, Austin and Byrd, as an associate, cutting my teeth, servicing portfolio companies, equity funds, and them sort of consolidating industries and doing a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and then reselling those companies after kind of making them increase in value. And not having an opportunity to kind of really work on some of the clients and some of the things that I wanted to focus on, and truly with some of the folks more so in our community that were looking for business services from sophisticated lawyers, I started a practice with one of my partners, one of my friends, a colleague in the field back in 2010, and we've been doing that in the form of Townsend & Lockett since 2010 to date.
I'm looking at your resume, and the only award that I see that you don't have is a Grammy or Emmy.
Yeah, you know, but I play they should give me some love for playing a lawyer day to day. But no, I think you know, I'll say I've been blessed. I've had great support, great opportunities to experience some things, and I'm interested in everything and everybody, and so. You know, I've been fortunate to have some recognitions here and there in connection with that work and those things that I'm involved in.
Talk about, you know, being that kid from Muskegon Heights, inspiring to do bigger and better things. What inspired you?
Yeah, so I'll say this. Muskegon Heights, you know, it has a varied reputation. You got a lot of naysayers that want to talk down on Muskegon Heights. But the thing about Muskegon Heights is it breeds the toughest, most resilient, creative people to this date that I've met in my life. And so being in the environment of Muskegon Heights, you'd always have to come up with it. We were creating opportunities to have fun and new games and new adventures and ways to get from A to B. And so generally speaking, sort of, being around people who are good at figuring life out, solving problems was inspiring. But we've always had heroes, too. You know, we've got some of the greatest athletes. We had, you know, we've had great leaders. We have executives that do things. And my brother was in front of me, and I had some friends who were like family who were in front of me going to the University of Michigan. But truthfully, one of the things that inspired me most is sort of my family life, right? Like my family come from rural Mississippi, working, you know, farm workers, work their way up to out of sort of poverty to higher blue collar level through education and just grind, right? And you know, I was always taught that education was a way to elevate myself out of whatever conditions I found myself in that I didn't like. And, you know, I always wanted more. I wanted more tools at my disposal to give more to people around me and to do things that were going to be supportive and helpful to people around me. And so I was really focused to do well in school from grade school into
Ms. Townsend. Ms. Townsend. I think you might have froze up for a second. We're going to see if we can get them back. But I want to talk about some of the things that he has done. Mr. Travis, Mr. Townsend, is not just your average lawyer, his firm. They deal in the billions of dollars of billions with a B. That's what they're dealing with. But also, if you look at his degrees, some of the awards that he's received is the McKinsey & Company Black Executive Leadership Program Award, the Leadership Atlanta Class of 2023 Award, the Leadership Buckhead Class of 2020 Award, the Leadership Georgia Class of 2018 Award, the University of Michigan Black Alumni MAD Making a Difference in Your Community Award in 2018, the National Black, the MBA Association Award for the Best Performing Chapter in the Channel Economic Development in 2018, Atlanta Business Chronicle 40 and Under Class 2017 Award, Georgia Trend 40 Under an Award, the Center of Civic, it just goes on and on. And we're just going to try to get this guy back because, you know, a lot of people, like you said, Muskegon Heights has this tendency to have where people will say nothing good happens in Muskegon Heights, but here is proof, and he is back. So I was just reading some of your accolades, sir. You're being modest. Just tell some of the success stories at your law firm. And I mean, you've done everything from big brothers to big sisters. But let's talk about your law firm first. Sure. Some of the accolades and some of the success stories that you guys have done.
Sure. Well, one of the first things is that we're successful in that we are here. You know, we founded in 2010. The average business startup doesn't make it past 5 years. They are very in a professional services business that is dealing with high dollars and complex transactions led by minorities. They really don't even exist. The odds are quite great that you will be able to be successful. It's hard to be successful. And so one of our biggest accomplishments is just being here. You know, I started, there were two of us. We were in a small office, same office, no window and no clients. And we had to build a book of business and convince, you know, people that we could do their work, even though we had just left Big Law. You know, I was working fantastic transactions, doing really well at large law firm, doing multi-million dollar deals, billion dollar deals. But when we set up on our own, you know, there was a question as to whether we could do it. And so going from that to, I mean, now, you know, in the high rise in the middle of Midtown Atlanta, you can see the backdrop going from no windows to plenty of windows. And we have four offices across the country. We're just in Atlanta. Now we're headquartered in Atlanta. We're in Dallas, Texas. We're in Chicago, Illinois. We're in Los Angeles, California. And we have lawyers even in Puerto Rico, you know, and Maryland area. And so we have grown. I've created jobs. Like, I cut checks, and I'm very proud of that. You know, it's one thing to do well making some money, and everybody should strive to take care of themselves and put a roof over their heads and some clothes on their back and food on their table. But I'm really proud of creating an engine that allows people to come and go to work, make a great living and take care of their family as well. But not only that, you know, being what we are, being one of, if not the only Black full service, Black firm, Black founded, Black managed firm in the United States, representing Fortune, you know, we've represented Fortune 20 companies, major telecoms, major beverage companies, your favorite beverage that you drink every day. We do work for those companies, the big tech companies. We have been able to do things that a lot of people say no Black people can do, let alone Black people from Muskegon Heights. And so I definitely, if you're out there listening, I would say, and you're there and you probably, you know, if you ever feel discouraged, understand. And I want people to understand this too. Sometimes when folks like me get on radio or on TV and we talk about who we are, it's one of the reasons why I really don't talk a whole lot about like the awards and the recognition, is because people sometimes confuse that with me being something different than what they are. But I want everybody at home to know, look, I'm ratty little boy running around in and out, you know, play basketball at the race streets and projects and Johnny O'Harris and same person. I was a kid running around there just like everybody else, walked those halls in Muskegon Heights, ran that track there, played. Everybody wants to be a basketball player. I dream of basketball hoop dreams too. No different than any of you. And the tools and all the talk about what you don't have at Muskegon Heights, it's not a barrier for you. You just got to decide to get around it and work with what you got. And I know that everybody there, you know, I'm not some different special person. I am a person who's working hard. I use the things that were in front of me, and you guys can do it too. You know, education is a powerful thing. It has given me a lot of opportunities, but there are people in Muskegon Heights that care about young people, their development. I'll say one of the things that separated me was I took advice, I took education, I absorbed the discipline, I accepted the molding of the people who were older than me, more knowledgeable than me, who actually knew what I thought I knew, who put me on the right track and squared me up when it was time to get me squared up. That's the one. That was the thing that separated me. There was nothing, you know, there's no specialness other than being discerning and listening to other people.
I want to talk about, you know, you have this successful firm, but you give so much back to the community, and you even have a scholarship that you give out. How important is it that when you reach a certain level that you give back to the community?
Yeah, I mean, I owe a lot, right? And so it's not even a thing. For me, it's like, look, I'm not here today, but for programs, you know, I was a member of the Urban League New Lights program when I was in high school. And wow, that program took me, there were people in college and adults who were volunteering their time. They were working their 9-to-5s and then volunteering their time to show me and other kids. You know, we would do sort of a personal and skills development after school. And then we did a college tour, which was something to this day I talk about how it impacted my life. It made college more accessible and real to me and more exciting because I went to see the places. And so having had those things, I think, contribute to my success. I received scholarships. You know, I got to give it to them. Look, I'm an alpha all day, alpha phi alpha all day. But I received a scholarship from Kappa Alpha Psi when I was going to college. And people, volunteers, my principal at the time was a member. And that organization was a community civic brotherhood organization that contributed to my advancement. And so knowing that I received that type of support and those type of things, that type of help, financial, education, exposure, there is really not an option to not give back. It is incumbent upon me. Whether you receive those things or not, I think that, you know, that was my story. I was benefiting, so I definitely needed to give back. And I think if anybody, if you really ask and you really ask yourself, honestly, everybody's receiving some support somewhere. You might not think about it or recognize it, but if you really take a real honest, there's none of us that make it without some people helping us and supporting us. But even regardless, like, people need support, right? And if I have the ability to provide support and provide guidance and education and instruction, those who have should give, and those who can do should do. And so for me, it's just part of the responsibility of living, existing. I'm able, and so I will.
Besides a law firm, talk about some of the other businesses and some of the other endeavors that you are involved in.
Sure. So I also have a consulting company, a business and education consulting company, Terenity Consulting Company, where one of our main offerings was a labor of love, and really kind of it was originally just a project that my brother and co-owner of the company, and he also hails from Muskegon Heights. He's a Muskegon Heights legend among himself, Michigan Track Hall of Fame, represented, the United States. And we put together this book and this concept. And now it's really just an overall training called When the Cops Come Knocking. And the goal of it really was to try to give everyday people some of the insights that we learned about the criminals as young people, as lawyers. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to make really young people be more equipped and more understanding of their rights and just kind of how to navigate encounters with law enforcement and things like that. Was just something we wanted to put out there to make sure everybody had a fair shot or a better shot.
Travis, I think he might have broke up again. There are so many things that he just said, and I was talking about the honors, but he was talking about, hopefully we'll get him to call back so we can finish this interview. But he has a scholarship that he gives out to the University of Michigan and his organization. You look at some of the things that he does. Not only is he an attorney, he's a consultant, he's a professor, he's a community servant. Like you said, they're based out of Atlanta, Georgia, but they're now in several other places. And looking at his resume is quite amazing. And you know what inspires me about this whole thing? Is that when people say the negative things about Muskegon Heights, and the negative things about Muskegon, and the negative things that they say about us, here is living proof, this gentleman right here, that you can be the very best person. And let's get him right back on. Let's see if we can get him back on. Okay, we got you back on. I was saying, you are a living example of what you can do if you put your mind to it. Talk to those individuals right now, those young kids, and maybe those older people that have aspirations but are afraid to reach out.
To reach out to me? So if they're talking about reaching out to me or anybody else, I'll say this, definitely, and I'll speak on behalf of most folks my age or old. Like, a lot of times young people don't really realize people who've been there, they ready to help. they might not know who needs help, or we like to talk. You can hear we're talking, right?
Right.
And so just like I represent a lot of folks, you might think you can't reach out to us or we're somewhere distant from you, but if you pick up the phone or email or something like that, you'd be surprised how ready folks are to pour what they've experienced into you, share what they know to try to make your life better, or give you a better shot, or help you avoid the mistakes that they made, or help you take advantage of the opportunities that they failed to take advantage of. I would say, don't get in a swirl in your head. If you're like, man, they wouldn't talk to me, or they wouldn't be ready to support me, or I'm somehow lesser, or I don't do enough myself, or I ain't in position for them to give me their time.
Attorney Townsend.
Things that most folks are impressed by is just sort of the step up of picking up the phone or email the out. It's like, hey, email from so-and-so. And they were like, hey, I'd love to tell you about.
Attorney Townsend. Okay. Listen, I think we may have him back, and let's see if we can get him back one more time. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you there? Listen, I want you to speak to the graduation class that just came out of high school, came out of Muskegon, or the adults that, you know, they have become properties of their environment. They've been told negative things, that they can't achieve anything. Talk to those individuals about how they and what they can do.
Absolutely. First of all, you can do whatever you want to do. And I was told those same things. I had people telling me I would never get into the University of Michigan, and Muskegon Heights folks don't get in there or go there. And so first, just ignore the negativity. But I will say this, though. You know, a lot of times folks be like, you can be whatever you want to be. And they don't tell you. I'm a real person. You got to know what you've done and what you put in to date. Assess who you are, where you are in the road to becoming whatever you want to become, and then put in the work. There are some people who graduated just like you, and they probably put in more work during the time that you were doing this and they were doing that. Don't expect to get what they get right away. Accept the fact that you might have to do more work to catch up. Expect that this is the reality. I'm just keep it real.
Can you say what you just said again? Because it's important that people hear what you just said.
Yeah, I'm going to say it real. Do a personal assessment. Look at what you've put in already. Just because you are the same age and you came out of school at the same year, there are people who have put in more time, more energy. They've invested in developing themselves and their skills, grades-wise or whatever, contacts and relationships. They are probably going to get some of the things that you want. Or if something, you know, right now I said you could be whatever you want to be and you've thought about what that is. They are probably going to get there faster than you from this point. But that doesn't mean you don't try. And that doesn't mean you don't accept that the challenge in front of you. I would say the reality about life is first assess what you got and then be real about it. Figure out where the distance between where you want to be and what you have and where you are, and then put the work in. Because here's the thing, there's going to be another year or three or five, and there's going to be people you looking left and right to, and that'll be the starting point for where you want to be. And that time, you don't want to look around and say, they put in more work than me from here. So right now, from this day forward, do the work to catch up and get on level playing field or even farther ahead. But I'll say this, though, nobody can stop you from doing what you want to do. There'll be people that'll try. I'm not saying that. You know, you won't run into no haters. You won't run into people who just flat out just trying to keep you down or keep you back. I don't know. That's life. Life has great people in it. It's got terrible people in it. Sometimes terrible people would have been great, but they had terrible people doing terrible things to them. Life is life. Mm-hmm. But whatever you want out of it, you can get it if you do what you got to do. It's going to require sacrifice. It's going to require discernment. You got to sometimes tell your friends you can't do what they trying to do, or you won't do what they trying to do, because it's going to set you back. Sometimes you don't get to party when other people partying. You don't get to drink when other people drinking. You don't get to eat when other people eating. And you got to go get dirty at your job and do the work while other people doing what you think is fun and sexy. But you got to do what you got to do to get where you got to be. Like, there was a time where I was broke. And I'm talking about when I started, I had this dream. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. I know a lot of people that wanted their own law firm. I wanted mine. I had gone to college, one of the best universities in the world, top 10 university in the world, law school in the world. I got a crazy paying job, one of these high rises, one of the top paying jobs in the world. And I left that because I wanted to start my own firm so I could do more, be more free. Well, I had to pay the price. It took a while before I could make money. I went from balling to broke. I'm talking about broke, like, real broke. Like, folks think they broke. I'm talking about broke like I wasn't paying bills. I went from, you know, big body Lexuses to broke, right? Like, and then it was my choice. Like, I could have always gone back. I left the place. They wanted me to stay, but I left. And there were people calling me back to come back. Like, don't be broke, Travis. We can give you even what you had and more. But I wanted this. I wanted it this way. I wanted to be able to be on my own terms. I wanted to be the person running the place so that I could hire young Black people, young people of color, pay them a lot of money, and then let them self-actualize, be who they are, wear their hair, how they want to wear it. Mm-hmm. You know, if they lucky enough to be past their 40s and still have hair like me, they can blow it out. I wanted them to be able to do that. And so right. I had to pay the price. I had to let my friends, when they were going to the club and buying out sections, when I used to do that with them, I couldn't do that no more. I was watching the pictures and the videos of them celebrating and doing it big, you know, in the Vegases, in the Miamis, and in the islands. And I'm here trying to figure out, you know, I'm eat these noodles until I can make enough money to get back on my feet. Now I'm back. I'm good. I can do that now. But it was a cost. And whether you might not have to pay that cost. You got to pay something, though. You got to pay something. You know, people talk about what come out of Muskegon Heights. At the time when I was in middle school, Mr. Allen was the principal at the time. And he always used to catch you in the hallway. And if you were not where you were supposed to be, he would always stop you and say, look, Townsend, you either pay now or you pay later. And that's been sticking. That stuck with me forever. I got that from Muskegon Heights. I got a lot of things from Muskegon Heights. I got that from Muskegon Heights. Mr. Burt, back in the day, my JV coach, and this was basketball, but it was life. He was like, shoot your shot and believe in your shot. Mm. And every time we took a shot, he made you say it. He would say it. Shoot your shot. This was before people used to use it, you know, and it was a slang, you know, go out there and shoot your shot. I'm going to shoot my shot. He shoot your shot and believe in your shot. And so when it's time for me to make it happen, When life is on the line, when it's all right, you want to really be big and you want to prove what you made of, you got to go out there and shoot. Because a lot of people if I wish I could be in that position. But when it's time to shoot their shot, they get scared. They don't want to shoot their shot. But I shoot my shot and I believe in my shot. That's Muskegon Heights. Muskegon Heights taught me so much. And I harken back on that all the time, a lot of those things all the time. So that's a reminder, like, look, don't believe nothing nobody telling you about what you can and cannot do coming from Muskegon Heights, because everything's there for you. It might not be what other people have, it might not be what they doing or what they're talking about, but it's everything you need. You're going to get different lessons. I got folks who, they might have had certain things, they didn't get the grit that I got from Muskegon Heights. And that keeps me from being able to do what I can do.
And I want to talk to you about that. I know we're running long, but thank you for your time. But I want to talk to you about that grit, because what made Attorney Townsend different than the person that they tell that can't be the leader of that firm? What made you different that said, I want to be where I can write checks for people that look like me, walk like me, talk like me, and dress like me? I want different. I want more. What made you different?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it's Muskegon Heights. So this is we'll start with the family. Like, my family has always talked about sort of achieving your dreams and putting the work in. And basically I was convinced by my family environment, and not just my nuclear, my parents, my siblings, my extended family, aunts, uncles. It's just culturally in my family, it's pretty much like, if you put the work in, you are going to succeed. You will do what you set out to do. And it might be really hard what you're setting out to do, but if you put in the work in, you can't really be stopped. It's only on you when you give up. You combine that with the fact that there are other folks who would like to do this, and they are they're smart. You know, I'm proud of my intelligence, but there's some sharp folks out here. So that's not necessarily it, but you have, having come up in Muskegon Heights, you learn to be tough. You learn to be fearless. You also learn that there's really there's nothing that you can't come out of. And when it comes to like financial wealth, poverty, you can navigate an environment that's, you know, you can really be on your knuckles and you learn that you can be okay though. You're going to be okay. And so knowing that, I was like, look, I can take the lack of income for as long as it's necessary to start getting income. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of people, because they didn't come up in a situation like that, when it gets tight, they bail out and go get, you know, get the job somewhere else. They just, they go back to, and they got to do what they got to do. Not knocking or not dissing, but that is to this day, I believe, one of the separators. I could let, and this is, my brother and I used to talk about this all the time about like racing. One of the keys to winning a big race, a big competitive race, is simply to outlast and endure more pain than the people running with you.
Preach.
And we always determined that if we could just absorb more pain than the next person, we would beat them because they would eventually break under the pain and they would slow down. And if we just went and absorbed the pain until they quit, we would go. And that's how I felt with being in this thing, building this business. It was like, look, I can be down here not making money, being humiliated, embarrassed, not being able to go here or not being able to buy that or not being able to do this or stunt like this. I can bear that. I can bear that better than anybody. And I can bear it until I win. And that's how it was. I was running a race of business. It was just hold on and make it through the pain until you win.
I got to go to the board and let's see. This is a real Robertson Senior. This is a great message, man. We can't continue to wait for others to give us an opportunity. We have to create our own. I'm an entrepreneur as well. And this is great. He says, and that was my drive. That was my driving force, creating an opportunity for people that look like me. That come from where I came from. You're doing us proud, man. Keep it up.
Well, thank you, Will, man. And same to you. And all the best to you. That's right. I love hearing that another individual has that same driving force, creating opportunities for us, looking out for the community. And here's the thing, like I do a lot of volunteer and nonprofit work. But as an entrepreneur, brother, look, ain't nothing wrong with you doing well and getting paid by helping other people and creating environments for other people to do well as well. So economic empowerment is strong. It's important. So you do your thing, man. I want to see it work out and continue to grow because you're going to be creating jobs and probably already are. And everybody wins. More of us win when we putting opportunities to work out there in spaces that we control.
Attorney Townsend, last question. We're going to have you back, man, because you're speaking wisdom. Talk about the importance for not selling, but going out there and obtaining your best. You know, you can settle for that money here or settle for that position here, but you know inside you have more, you have better, you can do more. Talk about not settling and advancing more.
Yeah. So, man, that's a great question. You know, it's like I'm on a fantastic show. I talk to a lot of people and they really kind of hit on that thing. But that's an important thing, right? Because we all have gifts. We all have a purpose in life, right? Like we all have a thing that we're really here to do. Along the way, you're going to be really good at other things and you're going to be rewarded for other things or being in other places. But you like that thing that's in you, it tells you that there's more for you. All of us get told there's more for us. But it's hard to get out of comfort to go further. Mm-hmm. And this is great because I have this conversation within my business all the time. You know, I just told you kind of the low. Then we did really well where, man, like everything was working smooth. We had the people in here, everybody knew the rules and everything was working. And then we had to think, me and my partner had to think, you know, my founding partner had to say, look, man, we're good right now. But if we grow, we're going to have to reinvest some of this money. We got to take some more risks. We got to get back uncomfortable. It's going to be kind of like going back again, even though right now we're doing great. But we had to, we committed to building this thing and making it bigger so that more people could have a better opportunity and more of us can actually come over here and we can service more people. So you have, most times you're going to find a moment where you're comfortable and things are working, but you know there's more for you. But beyond that, there's a bigger purpose for the greater environment, the greater community. And it's important that we achieve our true purposes and our true goals and our true limits, because not just for our own sort of self-actualization and fulfillment and doing well for ourselves, it's important that we do what we do for communities around us. Mm-hmm. There are people that work at my firm that have told me that they would not be practicing law anymore. They were going to leave the profession, but for the fact that now they're here and they are able to be themselves working on some of the most sophisticated work matters. And that right there for me makes me get up every day and go harder, even when I'm comfortable. Because nice. Had we not been here and had we not decided to try to create more so we can have more openings, more job openings and more work, so that we can get that person might not, there might not have been a space for them mm-hmm. here or in the profession, which that would be insane because we have some stars in here. I was thinking that's insane because these lawyers that these are the most brilliant people I know. And so sometimes you got to let go of your comfort zone, not just for you to achieve your best, but because you have a responsibility to the people around you to put out in the world your best. It has a purpose. It is going to impact people. It is necessary. Our community moves forward when the best of us do our best. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I would say, you know, do your best because the community moves forward.
Last word to you. Any shouts out or anything that you want to say to people from Muskegon and Muskegon Heights?
Man, just first of all, I'm a proud Tiger, man. That black and orange, man, it's forever. And I know things change, but that's my era. And I want to thank you guys on the show, Paul and the team, you guys for having me on the show and for always, you know, I follow the show and the posts and the announcements. You guys have been a special engine for educating and informing Muskegon Heights. And it is necessary and vital. You guys are so important. The information that you provide, I mean, there's so many terrible journal media mediums out there. And the information that y'all provide, making sure everybody has an opportunity. I mean, I just want to say thank you for doing what you guys are doing. It's really, really important work.
Thank you, sir. We're going to have you back on the show. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you back on. I know you're very busy.
Hey, just we'll work it out. Like I said, you know, I love my hometown and I love my folks. So we'll figure it out. We'll make it happen again.
All right. Take care, sir, and have a great holiday weekend.
Likewise, you too.
All right. Listen, fantastic show. I know we went long, but we had two great subjects that we had to talk about. Look, it's Memorial Day weekend. It's more than about picnics and barbecues. You know, some people are suffering because they did lose somebody in a war. Don't assume that everybody's doing great. You know, go out and check out on people. Listen, I'm Greg Roberts. As we always end this show, go out and sow a seed in somebody's life because that person might be the next Travis Townsend to employ other people. Take care. Have a great weekend. God bless. We'll see you next week on Torn In 2.